This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. Today, we'll be chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz. He is a healthcare practitioner specializing as an obstetrician and gynecologist. We're going to be chatting HPV, human papillomavirus. Hope I pronounced that correctly. And Dr. Sevitz, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Doc, tell us a little bit about the background of HPV. What is it? Who does it affect? And what are its impacts?
HPV is a virus. It's actually a group of viruses. There are over 200 different subtypes that have been described. And different subtypes affect different parts of the body. There's some that affect the mouth and the throat. There's some that cause warts on your hands or feet. And there's some that affect the genital tract, both in males and females. And the ones that affect the female genital tract at any rate, and also to a smaller degree males, have a some of them have a predisposition to cause cancer, particularly of the cervix and the vagina. And what has happened over time is people have subdivided ones that affect the genital tract into low risk for cancer and high risk for cancer. Now, if you have one of the high risk, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get cancer, but you've got to be watched more carefully because of that. And where they've analyzed women with cancer of the cervix and looked to see how many had the virus, the high-risk types, about 70%+ carry one of these high-risk types.
That's quite a high percentage.
Very much so, yeah. And the virus is basically sexually transmitted. There are the odd other ways of getting it, but I would imagine 98-99% of the time it's sexually transmitted. Given that, obviously, the more partners an individual has, be they male or female, the greater their chance of developing an infection with this. And from the male point of view, the follow-on is cancer of the penis. So that's also a factor. Now, the high risk, there are about 14 or 15 types that have been identified. Some women have one, most women probably have none. Some women have multiple types. The two, they've numbered them from one upwards of all the viruses, you know, whichever part of the body they affect. And the two big ones, so to speak, from a cancer point of view, are type 16 and 18. It's just a way of sort of differentiating that particular type of virus. Those are the ones we really worry about, but there are at least another 10 or 12 also are classified as high risk for cancer. And that's more or less what we're dealing with.
Doctor, what are the, if I may ask, and if it's a bit too much of a technical question, I understand this is more, I think, for me, but I know the listeners will appreciate it as well. What are the mechanics of the virus causing cancer? How does a virus lead to cancer?
Firstly, and we don't have numbers, but a certain significant percentage of people who are infected with a virus, be it a low risk, be it a high risk, their body's immune system will destroy that virus before it has a chance to cause any harm. And as I say, we don't know how many, what percentage of individuals that applies to, but I would imagine probably the majority. And that's, or I'll come back to that just now. What the virus does, if it persists in the body, is it modifies the immune system so that it, because go to a sidetrack for a moment.
Please.
Your body is always producing malignant cells. Everybody's body, as you're sitting here, yours, mine, and all the listeners' bodies are producing malignant cells. The immune system destroys them before they can progress and become a cancer. And that applies to all cancer. What happens with a virus is it modifies the immune system so that it doesn't destroy that virus. And so the immune system then doesn't kill off the cancer cells, and therefore they then proliferate and ultimately the individual may become, may develop a cancer. So that's so, essentially how it works.
So
and
more,
there are probably many other, sorry, there, right. there are many other mechanisms for blocking this immune system.
Right.
Drugs, other infections, radiation, you name it.
So it's not so much from a layman's terms for myself to understand, it's not so much that the virus is out to cause cancer, it's the virus is out to protect itself and ensure its longevity, and as a byproduct of that, it affects the body's ability to break down malignant cells. Did I do okay with that, Doc?
Yes.
Thank you so much. In terms of contracting the virus, you said it's basically sexually transmitted. So people that are not sexually active, is there any way that they could be at risk of contracting the virus? Or not really?
Theoretically, yes, but it must be pretty rare.
Okay.
You know, if they had to sort of touch an area of somebody else's body that has the virus and then touch themselves, they probably could transfer it with their fingers, for instance. But, I mean, you're not going to get it from a toilet seat, for instance.
Okay, yeah. You know, we remember back in the 80s with HIV and the panic with that,
Because it's not a very... what's the word I'm trying to think, but like very strong virus.
Okay,
simple things will destroy it.
Okay. So it's not that robust out of the body effectively.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably a better word. You know, touch, be it a sexual touch or just your hands, could theoretically do that.
So I suppose it goes back, just before we go to ads, Doc, it goes back to the old adage of wash your hands often and wash them properly and don't,
Don't touch areas that you shouldn't.
Yes, don't touch areas that you shouldn't. We are chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz. We will be back after these ads.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us today here on 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. My name is Nicholas Single, and I'm chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz, a healthcare practitioner specializing as an obstetrician and gynecologist. I got a little bit tongue-tied on obstetrician. There it goes again, Doc. a little bit of panic. So we were chatting HPV. Let's go into how do we improve the screening? How good is the screening? How has it improved? And are you seeing reduction in the cancer rates because of this virus?
Screening is fairly, certainly for women, is fairly easy. It can be done on the same specimen as a pap smear. So you take the pap smear, you send it off to the lab, and the lab can run both tests on the same specimen. And it's a pretty good screen. Obviously, it's not 100%, but very little is. Mm-hmm. But it's an easy test, it's a good test, and simple to do. Males, a swab from the penis would do the same thing. But obviously, depending on how much of the penis is involved, you may not swab the right area.
Mm-hmm.
Where at least with a pap smear, you've got a much smaller area to take a specimen from.
Right. And then you have a better chance of collecting the virus test. Okay. Yeah. Has screening improved and testing improved over the years?
Oh, yeah. It's become, the labs have improved their techniques and are able to screen for much more and do it much faster. So that's more a laboratory situation than anything else.
And
the technology, things have improved.
Can this screening be done by a GP and in a clinic, or does it have to be done? Okay, so not a specialist.
No, it can be done by anybody who's trained to do it. So it could be any doctor, it could be a nurse. It doesn't have to be a specialist taking the specimen.
Right.
And it's fairly easy to train people to do this type of thing. Then, out in the public sector, it's all done by nursing staff. Very rarely would it be done by a medical practitioner.
So maybe some intern doctors coming over from Europe to Barrow to do their trauma training. They get dropped into to doing all of this because I think they're terrified of the nursing staff because they're running the ER, Doc.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to ask is, have we seen a decrease in the rates of cancer because of the testing and the screening?
I can't talk about South Africa. I don't know what the situation is, but certainly in Europe, in North America, there has been a decrease. Certainly the big decrease was with pap smears. When they started doing universal pap smears, in other words, like in the UK, they try and do a pap smear on every single woman in the country. Same thing in Scandinavia and other European countries. The incidence of cancer of the cervix dropped dramatically with that. I think it's too early to say what effect the HPV screening would have, because it's a fairly new, it's been around for a few years, but it's a fairly new thing. My feeling is that with time, it will decrease the risk of cancer. And, you know, cancer of the cervix, for instance, in Europe, in Britain, has become a fairly rare disease because of more for pap smears than anything else.
Right.
And what we'll probably get to later is the vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure we'll come back to that later.
Yeah, absolutely. So just, it is International HPV Awareness Week. When we see diseases with their own International Awareness Weeks, that's obviously because it's had a large impact. What has the impact been on society, South Africa, and worldwide, if we could just touch on that?
Haven't a clue.
Okay.
The reason for that, certainly in this country, is quite simple, that most women are probably not being tested.
Right. Okay. Absolutely.
But, you know, one sees it in the ones that we're testing, one sees it fairly frequently these days. But also depends very much on the type of patient you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said earlier, the greater the number of partners a woman has, or a man for that matter, the greater the risk of contracting the virus and then passing it on to somebody else. The more promiscuous the individual is, the greater the chance of contracting the virus.
Okay. And is it possible for one to be a carrier without any physical signs?
Potential
partners, that's the risk.
Okay. Absolutely. That's the big problem.
Okay.
That the partner won't know about it. There's no way. The only way you will pick it up is on a test. There's no way that the partner would know.
So should we be looking at similar to Europe with just general population screening? Is this something that we should be looking at as a country?
Ideally, yes. Mm. But then, you know, you've got to have the facilities to be able to do the screening. And to give you an example, in the UK, when they introduced pap smears, universal pap smears, mm-hmm. and this was quite a few years ago, they worked out that they could only do every woman every 3 years, because the labs, if they tried to do it more frequently, mm-hmm. the labs wouldn't be able to cope with the number of specimens. So they thought, well, rather do everybody every 3 years than a percentage every year,
mm-hmm.
or every 2 years or whatever. So it really depends on what the lab can cope with, and also to get the people in to do the test.
Right.
Because the woman's actually got to come.
I
suppose in some ways you could go to sort of a workplace and see if you could screen the people that work there.
Right.
But what about all the people that are unemployed?
Which is the vast majority.
The majority, absolutely. Yeah.
So the testing, which I actually just realized now, because if you are having different sexual partners, it's not a one and done. This is something that you have to have repeatedly.
You know, the person could test negative today. He or she gets a new partner next week, gets infected. And that's the big problem.
Absolutely.
So if they stick with one partner, then it's fine.
And is this a risk in the different communities? Is it just within the heterosexual community? Or is it also a risk for other sexual communities?
I think it depends on how promiscuous the individuals in that particular community are. Like HIV.
Right.
The more promiscuous, the greater your chance of picking up HIV.
So effectively, just like HIV, it's a virus and it's the same transmission, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Do the same protection mechanisms work like a condom in terms of keeping one a little bit safer?
Oh, yes. If the male uses a condom, definitely the risk of transmission is significantly decreased, if not virtually eliminated.
And then from the time frame of contracting the virus to the potential development of cancer? Is it a specific time frame? Does it vary by individual?
It's individual. Depends, okay. I guess, more on the immune system than anything else. It may progress fairly rapidly. It may take decades to go from infection to invasive cancer.
So this is something that we should actually all be going for testing, and just if you are in relationships, different relationships, you need to make sure that you're getting yourself tested. For an individual, you can go to a clinic and just request a test and pay the rate and then wait for the result.
And it's a fairly quick test. I mean, the lab takes a day or two or three to run it. It's all automated, so it's easy to do.
Fantastic. You mentioned the vaccine. Can you tell us a little bit about this, please, Doc?
They developed a vaccine against HPV probably about 30-odd years ago. The trials were done about 30 years or so ago. And then from then they developed and ultimately started selling the vaccine. Like any vaccine, you've got to have it before you get the infection. It's not going to do anything to the individual once he or she has already got the infection. And that's why it's been licensed from the age of 9 in most countries, including South Africa. Mm-hmm. Because sad to say, there are 9 and 10-year-olds who would be having intercourse. Maybe not voluntarily, it happens. The original vaccine was against 2 subtypes, the 16 and 18 that I referred to earlier. Another company then developed a second vaccine, which was 16 and 18 plus 6 and 11. 6 and 11 are the subtypes that cause genital warts in both males and females. And then a few years ago, the company that did the 4-type vaccine developed a vaccine against 9 subtypes. So it was the 4 that are in the original product, plus another 5 high-risk types. And that's the one of choice today. It is more expensive than the other 2, but it's obviously a better vaccine because it gives you a wider protection. Mm-hmm. It doesn't protect against every high-risk type, but it protects against a significant percentage. And as I said, ideally you need to get that vaccine in before the individual becomes sexually active. Vaccines, as sort of licensed at the moment, you need 3 injections. The nine subtype, you need an injection today, a second one 2 months from the first, and a third one 6 months from the first. But there are trials going on in various parts of the world with a 2-dose vaccine and even a 1-dose vaccine, which may not be as effective as the 3-dose, but would give significant protection and obviously with a significant cost saving.
Right.
Because of this, particularly in the public sector. Mm. And what's actually happening in South Africa is the public sector, particularly the public sector, are going to schools to vaccinate the girls, sort of later primary school or even the beginning of high school, to try and get in before anything sort of happens. Mm-hmm. There are countries in the world where the boys are also being vaccinated, which makes sense if you think about it. I don't know if that's actually, it's happening certainly in the private sector in South Africa where sort of parents are asking to have their sons vaccinated as well. But I don't, as far as I'm aware, it doesn't happen in the public sector.
Right.
And that gives a very, very good protection. And I think with time, we'll notice a significant decrease in the incidence of infection and subsequently cancer because of the vaccination.
The vaccinations, okay. Doctor, in your sort of view, given the potential, the violence within South Africa with gender-based violence, with the high level of abuse that is happening. Is this advisable for parents to consider for their kids, even if they, you know, if the kids are not acting or may not be acting in a promiscuous way, as just as a safety barrier?
Mm. Oh, yeah, I think even for long-term use, because it seems to be effective almost indefinitely that we're aware of.
Right.
We may find with time that, say, in 50 years' time, it's not as good. Mm-hmm. But it's effective for a very long time and would protect the individuals once they become sexually active or once they get married, if they marry a partner who is who's already been infected. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think everybody should be potentially everybody should be vaccinated.
Right.
Never mind what Kennedy says in the United States.
Okay.
But that's another story.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit about what is he saying, or is it not necessary to bring into the conversation? Fair enough.
So tell you about?
No, just saying. With is he an anti? Is he anti-vaccine as sort of a general thing?
Yeah. So that's okay. You know.
Fair enough.
No. But you know, I think the sensible thing is to vaccinate people.
Yeah. Particularly,
vaccine. You know, what I always say to people, and just to digress for a moment, is vaccines have probably saved more lives than anything else in medicine.
Absolutely.
You think of the diseases that we no longer see because of vaccination, polio, smallpox, diphtheria, these type of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's an excellent sort of treatment, or not treatment, but prevention.
Prevention, absolutely. Yeah, it's a given. And, it's just something that is so tried and tested that, definitely that's something that should be considered and looked at for kids from parents. Because they say, are there any known side effects of the vaccine that people should be aware of?
Yeah, there are. Like anything, every medicine has side effects. People may feel soon after the injection, within hours or days, a flu-like illness, which you can treat with paracetamol.
Mm-hmm.
There are risks, but they're minor
compared to
and the benefits far outweigh
the risks.
Those risks, and they're rare. I mean, most people will have the vaccine and maybe a bit of a flu illness but nothing else.
Nothing else.
You can get an allergic reaction. You can get almost anything with that, but they're rare.
Right. In terms of the number of people that are benefiting.
Probably millions and millions of people have been vaccinated to date.
Right. 100%. I think that's really the proof of the pudding is in the number that have been vaccinated and are living normal, healthy lives. Doc, we're going to go to ad break. When we come back from the ad break, I'd just like to sort of get your thoughts on what's happening within the schools, how are those programs being received, and then any other ideas that you'd just like to touch on with regards to HPV. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz. He is a healthcare practitioner specializing as an obstetrician and gynecologist. It's HPV Awareness Week, and we're chatting about HPV, human papilloma virus, and just chatting about the vaccines, and it almost seems like a no-brainer. Let's go to ads, and we'll be back after that with the doctor.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us today on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show. My name is Nicholas Engel. I'm chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz here on 101.9 Chai FM. Doc, we were chatting about the vaccine before we went to ad break. You also mentioned that they are looking to introduce the program into schools. The private sector has done so to some extent. How has that been received at sort of on school level and perceived sort of by parents?
I can't really give you an answer to that question, but you know, the parents are agreeing to have their children vaccinated, so I assume that they, because you know, you obviously have to get consent.
Right, yes.
And my understanding is that the majority of children get vaccinated. You know, you get people who don't believe in it, their prerogative. Right. But I would imagine that, you know, where it's gone into the schools, the majority are receiving the vaccine.
Right. And I think just, you know, the impact of cancer on one's own life, one's family, one's community is massive, particularly within the poorer areas of South Africa where, you know, the healthcare system is really, really stretched. And it just, to me, it doesn't make sense not to have the vaccine done. Are we seeing also developments in the vaccine? Are there new ones being tested and tried out? You mentioned the different terms, sort of the three-step, the two-step, and the one-step. But what does the future hold?
I don't know about new products because companies, until they're almost ready to market the product, won't say anything.
Right.
So, you know, there's no information on that unless you're part of a trial.
Okay.
So I can't answer that question. But, you know, as I said, mentioned earlier, they are sort of comparing the efficacy of a single dose, two dose, and three dose.
Right.
And as I say, the one and two doses are slightly less effective, but they're certainly far better than nothing.
Than nothing, absolutely. Why would parents or people look at going for sort of a less effective dose, you know, with less shots? Is it about the injection? Is it about the cost? Is it both? Because, Doc, to be honest, I'm not a fan of needles. No. It would be a challenge for me as well.
Yeah, cost, I think, is a major factor. The nine types. I'm open to correction, but it's something like 2,000 rand a dose. And whether your medical aid would pay for it, I don't know. It depends on the medical aid. So you're looking at 6,000 plus rands for a course. Obviously, in the public sector, they don't pay anywhere near that, but it's still a significant amount that they're going to have to pay.
And I mean, that amount can be out of reach for many families in South Africa. You mentioned the public sector. Is this something that is available from the public sector and a reduced rate, and that's an option for people to go in and...
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure how easy it is to get in the public sector, but it certainly is available
okay.
there.
Right. So I suppose it depends really on where you're receiving your health care and how that system is set up and working. Something just, you know, for myself personally and for parents, it's so important because parents are effectively the adults for the kids until the kids can be adults for themselves. And what would you say to parents about vaccinating their kids? And, you know, I know we've touched a lot on the disease, but just the effects of not doing it and potentially contracting the virus and the effect on one's life.
I would advise every parent to vaccinate their children because the person that child eventually has intercourse with, they probably don't know they've been infected, and they may, even if they do know, they may not reveal it. Rather say, protect yourself before anything, take a chance. But as I said, the big problem is that the individuals will not know that they're carrying the virus unless they've had a test. So, and even as we mentioned earlier, that test may be negative today, but with another partner becomes positive.
And I think
so you don't know.
You don't know. And the one thing I remember being told in high school, I matriculated in 1988. So this was at the beginning of the HIV pandemic. And we were always told that just remember, every person that you sleep with, you're sleeping with every person they've slept with. And that was absolutely shocking and terrifying to me in the 80s. So I think it was also very effective. But that is the reality. And particularly if nothing is showing and nothing is visible and the person is healthy, it's really not a risk that's worth taking.
I like that expression. Well, I think it's very valid.
That you're
and even if you have a if you have a regular partner, you don't know what they're doing in between you and somebody else. You know, I maybe being cynical, but this is unfortunately the reality of life.
I think if you look at the divorce rates in the country, in the world, and 2 out of 3 marriages are ending, infidelity is a large contributing factor to that, and one does need to be safe. And in essence, you're protecting yourself today for something that may happen in 10 years. So it doesn't make sense not to do it, not to take the vaccine.
And the vaccine is a good vaccine.
Yeah.
It works.
Right.
It may not protect you against some of the other subtypes. There's maybe 5 or 6 other subtypes, high-risk subtypes. Mm-hmm. But they're unusual. You know, what the company did was to go for the most common, the 9 most common. And the 9 most significant in terms of causing cancer.
So, So it's hedging the bet against the worst, but the potential effectively. Now, we're just going to go to our final ad breaks. And then when we come back, we'll have a few minutes to wrap up. I'd love your thoughts on just what you would like to share with the listener to just in terms of your experience dealing with this. And what people should really be looking out for and doing. We're chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz here on the Dischem Medical Monday show on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and we'll be back with you shortly.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dischem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Dischem Medical Monday show. I've been chatting with Dr. Hilton Sevitz, and we've been talking HPV and the vaccine. We've given quite a bit of time to, which I think is really important, because when you have a vaccine against something, you should be using that vaccine. Doc, your thoughts as we wrap up just for our listeners?
Okay. The first thing is, as I would agree with what you've just said, that get vaccinated. And early on, before the individual becomes sexually active. It can be done after they're sexually active, but it may not be as effective. There may be a failure rate. But you can vaccinate 20 and 30 and 40-year-olds if you need to. The second point is less promiscuity, because that's the way it's going to get spread. This vaccine, the virus, is going to get spread. To be tested for it, the labs generally don't advise testing under the age of 25, unless it's a very high-risk population, because most people who get infected under 25 their immune system will probably destroy the virus. So they say from 25 years onwards. Once you get to that stage, when the woman goes for her pap smear, ask them to test for the virus at the same time. So it's done on the same specimen. It's nothing extra from her point of view, except the cost, obviously, because you need to pay for that test as well. And it's a good test. It'll come up positive. And provided she's monogamous, you could probably leave that test maybe repeated in 4 to 5 years' time.
Right.
Just in case the partner's not monogamous. And the other thing is what has become a worldwide trend these days is you can increase the interval. But if you don't carry one of the high-risk viruses, you can increase the interval between pap smears, because it's less likely that you're going to get an abnormal pap, which may progress to cancer.
Okay.
What they're saying is every 2 to 3 years, maybe even 5 years, some people are saying, between pap smears, provided there hasn't been a new partner in that time period.
Right,
so it all it really boils down to the number of sexual partners an individual has.
I think, Doctor, that's a fantastic point to leave it on. You know, treat your body like an adult. Be respectful of your body and be respectful of your health and take advantage of what medical science has developed, what is out there in order to keep us safe and safer. Dr. Hilton Servitz, thank you so much for joining us today here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm your host, Nicholas Ingle, and I'll chat with you next week.